Okay, thank you. So many thanks to the organizers of this wonderful program. And thanks also for the opportunity to give a talk. And I'm also very grateful to the McKevley Institute and staff. Okay, I will talk about resurgent monomials. I will define them and show how they can be used, but we will be focusing on just one example, and we'll introduce all the necessary materials in one example. Okay, all what I will be talking about is contained in one paper by Eckhart, who is the founding father of the resurgent theory. So the paper has a very long name, Twisted Resurgence Monomials on a Local Spherical Canonical Synthesis of Local Objects. So we refer to Twisted. And it was published in a volume which was edited by Ovidiu and Martin Kraskal and Angus McIntyre about 15 years ago. Okay, so everything I will be explaining today is contained in this paper. This paper is a very rich one. It was about 100 pages long, and let's say very concise proof. So see my talk as an invitation to read this paper, and in particular, I will be focusing on one of the construction, of the many constructions that are in this paper. And I think in the end, they might prove eventually interested for some of you, I mean some questions in physics, and I terminate my talk by a question, a suggestion. Okay, and another very relevant paper for this one I will be talking about is a paper by David Sauzin here. Mold expansions and for the saddle node and resurgence monomials, the papers which was published 10 years ago about, and okay, it's also a long title, so I'll refer to it as mold. And in the last part of my talk, let's say in the last 15 to 10 minutes of my talk, I will mention a construction which will be an important technical part of the constructions involved in what I will be describing. It's the process of arborification. I will just mention it briefly, and okay, one reference for this is a paper by Frederic Menou, David Sauzin and myself, which is in press in the Bulletin of the French Mathematical Society. So in this paper in particular, there are detailed explanations and detailed proofs about the process of arborification, which will be a key technical element, but it will arrive at the very end of my talk. Okay. So I will have to speak about resurgent functions, alien derivations, and then move on to resurgence monomials. So I'll briefly recall so that we have a common ground, and if only for the sake of notations, some of the basic facts about resurgent functions. First, very informally, and then right afterwards I will state a theorem due to Eckhart and give all the relevant definitions in a precise way. So let's be informal for a few minutes here. What are resurgent functions about? Many of you have encountered situations where you meet this phenomenon of resurgence, and you have typically a formal series, let's say without constant term, and the variable z will be close to infinity, and I will stick to these notations later on. Okay, this series typically can be, for example, an expansion in inverse of the Planck constant or in a coupling constant, or in mathematics, as will be the case in the example that we'll detail in a few minutes, it will be just the time in a differential equation that we study near a singularity, an irregular singularity, which gives rise to divergent series. Okay, if the divergent series is of Jouret 1 growth, meaning that if you have some majorant expression of this type, then it's you can take the Borel transform of this thing and associate to it a function. I will keep the same letter, but I will stick to the later on to the traditional variable zeta, which is a function which is analytic at the origin C. And the whole machinery of resurgence involves the analytic continuation of this function, which is obtained as the Borel transform of the Jouret 1 divergent series appearing in some interesting problem. For example, once again, the study of a dynamical system near an irregular singularity. And the whole thing about it is that you will have a disk of convergence. You can continue this function. And you will meet isolated singularities. There are, by the way, there are extensions of Eccles' theories which involve quasi-analyty continuations and dense sets of singularities in C, but we will definitely not go into this. On the contrary, very soon we will focus on an example where the singularities are on the integers. Okay? What we are doing is that we are following the analytic continuation, and we are in a situation there the singularities are isolated. And the whole business is about going to a singularities, to one of these isolated singularities, and analyze the behavior of the function near its singularity. In particular, we also might have to go around one given singularities, which will give rise to the notion that we'll have to introduce later on when defining in a precise way the resurgent functions that we'll have to work with. Okay, so there are operators here. If the point here omega is if the letter omega designates the singular point, there are operators that measure the singular behavior. Okay, and I will redefine them in a while in a precise way, but it's just to introduce the topic. So we have a family of operators, and by pullback here, and we designate them with the same letter, there will be operators which don't measure anything. We don't see anything here, but we obtain them by pullback of the singularity measuring operators that we have just defined on the Borel plane, on the Borel side. Okay, so we have operators here, and we have by pullback operators at the level of the formal series. Okay, now these operators we can start iterating them. By their very definition, they are obtained by a process of analytic continuation. So we can go to this singularity, and from that, maybe do the analytic continuation to some other singularities. So meaning that we'll have to deal with composition of these operators. Okay. And so a remark which is very basic, it's just common sense. Once you know that you meet the phenomenon of resurgence in the problem you're interested in, you can go for and look and try to use functions which behave well with respect to these functions. It's just common sense. You start with from functions of just one variable, you go to the Borel plane, and we'll get an infinity of operators, which I will redefine once again precisely in a while. And once you know that you have these operators, then you can compose them, and once if they are important for the problem you're interested in, you can try to work with functions which behave well with respect to these resultant functions. So to speak, you are looking for functions which a priori will depend on a sequence like this, or a word. These letters are just have a vocation to be singularities in the complex plane, which are, so to speak, dual to these operators. In which sense? Well, we'll see in a minute. Okay, that's the... Yeah?
When you started, I just kind of to follow. The point now which you expected, it is zeta equal to infinity, right?
Yeah, z is...
Right, so in this way, it is specific behavior at like zeta, right?
Yeah.
And here, when you saw it from Balean image, you are talking about zeta equals zero.
Yeah.
So not that point, because...
No. Just a Borel transform here, which I will. Okay, yeah. I will not. Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to recall some things, but not necessarily everything, because we had already several talks. Okay. So the Borel transform of this series in the new variable is this.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't write it, but
yeah. It's what I'm asking. It's in reverse, as they say. So what was infinity in zeta becomes zero.
Zero in zeta. Yes. Once again, I wanted to reassess a few things, but we already had a number of talks. So yeah, but maybe I should have written explicitly. You're right. The Borel transform. Yeah. Okay. So we had a divergent series of general one growth, and we now go near the origin, and the process of alien calculus is about analytic continuation and going around isolated singularities. Okay? And now, when we do this, we will discover that there are some operators with very good bright properties. Some of them will be derivations of relevant algebras, and we can compose these operators, and dually we might look for some resultant functions which behave well, in which precise sense we will see in a moment, with respect to this composition of alien operators. Okay? And now I will go into the problem we will want. Yeah, I'll keep this for the moment. And I will introduce now the problem we'll focus on is the classification of saddle node singularities. Okay? So where do these singularities appear? Well, very simply, it's just the exponential. Take the exponential functions. It's very irregular. It's in time, but it's infinity. It is irregular, and in particular, if you look at in 1 over x, for example, if you look at e to the 1 over x, of course, it has a very dissymmetric behavior according to what's going on the right-hand plane or the left-hand plane. Okay, and this function is a solution of a very simple differential equation with a minus sign. Okay, so this is the first example and the most elementary ones. It might soon seem too elementary for you, but you will see very soon how we will expand on this. It appears as a singularity of this linear first-order differential equation, but near here x is near zero, 1 over x is near infinity, and they have this type of behavior. And of course, we also get a whole family of solutions, and I also take this advantage of introducing the notation. The whole family of solution is remember, I'll keep z near infinity. Here, x is near zero. Okay, so we have completely described the set of solution of this equation. Okay, too simple. Let's now complicate a little bit, and thank you. Okay. Now we are going into a non-linear, first-order, but non-autonomous differential equation. And our objective is to classify such objects. A few days ago, we had a wonderful talk by Sergei Gukov involving diagrams, separatrices between singularities and higher dimension phase space. Here, we'll be just looking at one singularity, but we want to understand everything in it. So we look at singularities of this type. B is an analytic function, so it's just a perturbation of this thing. So this thing can be seen as a normal form as this equation. In which way? Well, we can change here y in this equation as a function of x and y norm as a formal series such that the transformation such that this equation is formally transformed into that one. The whole point is that all the series involved in the expansion will be divergent, every one, and displaying some resurgence. Okay, and so what we want to do when I say what I. Yeah?
The letter,
yeah, yeah. Here it's a y, and here it's an x.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's a b. Yeah. It's a perturbation of x and y. Yes. Is that clear? So we're interested in this family of equation. It looks simple, but we want to understand everything about the singularity. Meaning, we want to understand the moduli space. What are the invariants would describe the moduli space of this equation with, around the singularity? In fact, it was a very difficult problem. So we have this equation here. The analytic classification was solved by Martinet and Ramis. And I will not go into the detail because it would take me too long, but it was just to show the importance of this problem and the difficulty of it before going to the resurgent point of view and develop the analysis with the help of Eckhard's alien calculus and moving into resurgent monomials. Okay, what happens is that the normalizing transformation to go from here to there involve infinite series. Okay, the formal series are divergent and Jevrey 1, so they are amenable to Borel transform in any direction and with exponential growth at infinity. So this is the zeta plane, and what I will be explaining here, showing here, concerns all the series in this expansion. Remember, this expansion is a formal expansion that transforms our given equation into its normal form, very simple normal form. Okay, so we have analytic continuation in every direction, except r plus and r minus, the positive and negative real axis, and we have exponential growth at infinity. So along each line here, you have exponential growth at infinity, meaning that all the transformation involved so we can perform Laplace transform in any direction except the two critical directions, positive real axis and negative real axis. And of course, as almost I think everyone here knows, there's the comparison between this summation process when we are close to this direction and close to that one is the Stokes phenomenon. But the Stokes phenomenon is very different in complexity from one direction to another. In this direction here, there is a Stoke automorphism which will sense the solution, the general solution of that equation below and above. The transformation will involve a diffeomorphism. The U is the same variable here. It's the variable that parameterizes the leaves of the foliation, of the solution, the family of solution near the singularities. In this case, it's completely trivial. But then, if we know how to transform this equation formally into that one, plug in the general solution here and use the process of Borel-Laplace summation, we can get a description of the families of solutions for the equation E we're interested in. So in R+, there is the Stokes diffeomorphism that sends solution from slightly above, from solution from slightly below, with respect to the direction of summation. And one last thing before going into resurgence is that the Stokes diffeo is just translation by a constant. Okay, everything is due to Martin et Ramis, and there is a resurgent version of this, which was done completely independently at about the same time, around 1980, by Eckel with his theory of resurgent functions. And in particular, the connection between the two are explained in detail in this paper by David. Okay? So, there are two things in this. Yeah.
Just a few clarifications. So B is analytic in both variables, in X and Y. That's something that.
This?
B is a function.
Yeah, it's an analytic in X and Y.
Right.
Okay, so this equation is analytic.
Constant. So.
Sorry?
The constant is zero, so it starts with higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Secondly, in the inequality there, Yn. The constant may depend on anything.
Yeah, there is some uniformity to make it possible for the general summation. Once again,
it doesn't. So it doesn't depend on n. C can depend on n in a way that is.
No, it's tractable. It can depend. We have a control of this the dependence upon n of the exponential growth.
Mm-hmm. Because you'd have expected that you find a uniform bound. Which is valid for all of them.
A.
Yes. But that's
C depends on
C.
Yes.
Not A. Okay. Sorry. Did not understand.
Maybe finally, the Stokes phenomenon was on the negative line, just to make a connection with.
Yeah, okay. For the resurgent analysis, I will need both direction. But of course, and the Stokes. Phenomenon that most of a few people have encountered in applications are relative to this direction. But still, for the analytic classification, I have to consider the two directions, and they are very different. Okay, now, this is very short sum up of this difficult problem. This paper was in a 100 pages paper in publication on the IHES in 1982, and it spawned a great number of works later on. Okay, the point, and I am moving to resurgent, is that we have a moduli space, which is, I will state it here. So we have a moduli space, which is huge, in fact, because to have the analytic classification of this equation, you must have a grasp of the Stokes phenomenon in both directions. In that one, it's just essentially translation by a constant on the value of the parameter that parameterizes the solution of the equation. But then the other side, there is a huge space of Stokes diffeomorphisms to consider. It's just the group of diffeos tangent to identity. Now, the classification theorem of Martin et Ramis was complete in a sense that it gave an exact description of this set of this modular space. And in classification problems, usually there is one part which is hard and one other part which is even harder. And I will be coping with the reverse part. The reverse part is called the synthesis, or to retake a word that we have heard in then taught by Daniel in a totally different context, some reverse engineering. We will be considering invariance a priori, and we will build some dynamical systems, and we will build in through the use of these resurgent polynomials. Okay, so in the rest of the talk, I will now give the resurgent description of the same problem in Eckel's parlance, and then I will introduce and formulate the reverse problem, in which sense reverse, you once again you will see in 5 minutes, and then show how resurgent monomials can be used to solve this reverse problem. But I wanted to put this into perspective to show, because it's a very hard problem in analytic classification of dynamical systems. Okay, so now, yeah. Sorry? Yes, for the problem, yeah, it's really exactly the same singularities. I will just restate these results, but in a language of resurgence. But and then move on to describe the process. But the process itself is very general, can be applied to many instances of dynamical system at singularities, and I refer to the twisted papers for many examples of this formalism. Okay. Equation. It's formulated in the variable z, z is near infinity, so this one corresponds exactly to that one. It's once again exactly the same data, but I will express it in the z variable and formulate the result in the language of resurgence. Okay. Okay, so it's a theorem. The general solution of E involves resurgent functions. Of what type? I will describe in a minute. Okay.
It's the general support solution.
Yeah, it's for the moment it's a formal expansion. It's a formal expansion, and I'm saying that there is an expansion of this type, and the general formal solution of this equation is exactly this, and an immediate consequence of the fact that we know the general formal solution of this one, just u to the ez, and we are plugged it to this formal normalizing transformation, which go from that one to this one. Okay, so for the moment it's just formal, but I'm starting to say something about the resurgent structures. So this yn of z are resurgent with singularities in z. What do we mean by this? It's in the beta, in the zeta plane, the Borel transform of the yn have singularities possible singularities at the integer point. Okay, what does it mean? Is that the Borel transform of each of these formal series is convergent with a radius of convergence which is at least one, and we can analytically continue the functions along each path that avoid this singular point. Okay? And second fact,
but all the singularities are simple poles, right?
Single poles plus logarithms in this formal class. I mean, I've not made precise all the hypotheses I made here. There's formal series which which start with z minus one, and in this case it is formally conjugate to this normal forms. And you have for the singularities in the Borel plane only poles and logarithmic points. I would be coming to that point right now.
So in the X plane, does that mean that all the singularities kind of stack up and around the?
Well, if you wish, I mean, but the right point is you apply this Borel transform and you do all the work in the zeta variable. So now the singularities don't accumulate; they are just isolated. But that's a theory. It's something you have to prove. So it was proved by Eckhall around 1980, and many details can be and precise, completely. Complete proofs and very precise ones can be read in the Mould paper by David, for example.
In this case, in this way, you have this function which you already saw in original would be exponential, right? Because conjugated to this pole, it would be exponent, but it would be the factorial diversion would be present. No.
What I'm stating, and once again, it is this. All these theories are Gevrey one.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you apply Borel transform, you get an analytic function. In fact, I'm saying that this analytic function has radius of convergence of at least one. First thing, and second thing, you can analytically continue following any path from the origin that avoids the integer points. Okay, so there will be two singular directions, and in particular for the Borel-Laplace summation process, we find again, of course, the positive and negative real axis that we had seen before. Okay.
No, but what I was trying to
Sorry.
Ask that if we restore this original function, this original function would be containing poles. Poles would be corresponding to exponential behavior, right? In the
essential singularity.
I'm wondering, would it be this factorial expansion would for this particular case would be also present?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
This is the trans-series solution of the
MLOT.
Which has all the features, factorial divergence for the square series and so on.
So once again, I consider a particular class of equation. I will describe a method, and the method will apply to more general situations. We can discuss this later on, for example, and also they are detailed to a certain extent in the twisted paper. Other questions?
Is Y dimension one? It's like a vector?
It's dimension one. It's, I said before, it's a non-linear differential equation of first order, but non-autonomous. But of course, there are generalization in any dimension. I'm just taking the smallest, the set of nodes in the smallest dimension where it happens. So it's either you can see it as a vector.
You had in his paper,
It's a generalization, and Frederic explains the theory based on a very simple example.
Yes.
The simplest non-trivial example.
Exactly, but it's highly non-trivial, but you're right. I mean, there are generalization in any dimension. Essentially, the same formalism applies, and once again, there are examples which are also shown in the paper, in the twisted paper, and of course, that works by many other people, including Ovidiu. But it's a non-trivial example, but it's already a very difficult one. As I said, the moduli space, we don't want to have some partial results of summation or partial results concerning the description of the solution. We want to know everything, the analytic classification. And this involves a huge space. The moduli space is huge because, as we have seen before, it's essentially C times the group of diffeos tangent, analytic diffeos tangent to identity. So this will be reflected in this stack. Okay, I must say a little bit about these alien operators. And so it means the AN are constant. And here N is minus 1 or 1, 2, etc. Okay. So let's focus here on the zeta plane. These functions, all the yn, the components of this formal expansion, which is written on the left, can be continued, and there are operators which measure the singular behavior of this function in the vicinity of the point n. Okay, and these operators involve continuation by circumventing the singularities we meet, a finite number. So they are 2 to the r n minus 1. Here, a way to circumvent the singularities we meet when going, for example, in this direction. And the singular behavior that we have is, as said before, and when you ask this question, of a simple pole type plus a logarithmic singularities, meaning a simple pole plus a logarithmic time and analytic functions. So these operators, what we had seen before in introductory talks in the beginning of this program, yes, Alan, yeah.
If you, okay, I also love to travel backwards in Borel plane.
Sorry?
I mean, if you go from 1 to 2, you can go from 2 back to 1 and to 0. Do you also have any statements about those singularities?
Yes, we can iterate these things, but for the moment, I will just consider the actions of these ones, and I will take once again, and moreover, in the rest of my talk, I'm 5 minutes late, so I hope I will make it. I will just take a simplifying assumption: is a minus one difference from a minus one is zero. So I will consider this and only singular directions. So this technical difficulty, which you rightly alluded to, will not be a problem in the rest. Okay. Okay. So the problem I want to cope in the second half hour, well, it will be 25 minutes, is the inverse problem. Is that it is a fact, it is a theorem, that there are constants such that when you apply these alien operators, which I have no time here to redefine, I can, if there are questions later on, of course, but we had seen them in previous talks, these operators that measure the singularities of the analytic continuation of the zeta, and these singularities are in turn responsible for the Stokes phenomenon here in the r in the positive real axis direction. These operators, they act in this way under formal expansion. They act as ordinary differential operators, but take care of the variable. They are operators there's a un here, of course, which I had written before but not here. Yeah, the family of solution, there is this constant u here, this formal parameter, and this infinite expansions. Okay, so these alien operators that measure singularities act in this way. They are constant. Okay, and this constant, it can be shown that they are analytic invariant. They characterize the equation. Now we are interested in the reverse problem. If we give ourselves such a family, an infinite family of coefficients, can we build an equation which has this family of invariants? It is a very hard problem because it involves building something starting from a moduli space which is of infinite dimension. Remember, the moduli space is C times the group of analytic diffeo tangent to identity. And my purpose here now will be to introduce very briefly some families of resurgent monomials. So there will be resurgent functions with particularly simple behavior, which will be adapted to solve this problem. And this will involve some constructions by Eckel, which were in this paper edited by Ovidiu et al. 15 years ago, but not been used. And it might have some features which might be interesting to some people here. That's why I decided to choose this particular problem to introduce resurgent monomials. Okay, so we want I'm saying again that I'm from now on I'm continuing with a simplifying assumption. This is not a generic assumption. It's to ease the presentation because there are a number of constructions to...
You said m larger than 1, right?
A minus 1. You see, these coefficients, they have coefficients like this for n minus 1, 1, 2, etc. So I suppose from now on that the A minus 1 is 0. So in fact, there won't be any Stokes phenomenon in the air. Yeah, it's minus 1. Okay, but I will stress that the constructions I'm describing work in the general case. With a minus 1 different from 0, and also in larger dimensions and for other classes of problems. Okay, and so how do we proceed? Well, we will build construct, let's say, a change of variables so our aim is to build, and as effectively as possible, a change of variable which can bring... We start from this normal form, simple, very basic equation. We transform into an equation of this type, which has as invariant the numbers we give ourselves. Okay. Now, there will be some growth condition of the AN to start with. They will reflect the fact that we have Stokes phenomenon in the R plus directions, and with some growth condition, which I will not detail, but we start with such a family of coefficients, and we want to construct an analytic equation which has these invariants, which display these coefficients we give ourselves at first. Okay, and now, I will go in a minute into resurgence monomials. But the way Ecal copes with these questions in very general situations is that he doesn't deal actually with change of variables. He deals with automorphism, what he calls automorphism of substitutions. What are these? When we change variables, for example, from x to x normal, or conversely, so it's a change of variable, we can associate to h theta, which will be called an automorphism of substitution. How is it defined, theta? Okay, it can be shown that this arrow here to H associate this transformation acting on, let's say, formal series, you just postcompose by H. If you give yourself a change of variable, either formal or summable, anything, for example, formal, you can a priori consider this transformation acting on your observables. And this thing here, this transformation is bi-univocal, and it's in particular explained in detail in the recent paper by David Sauzin, Frédéric Menou, and myself. And so, what it is it good to work with this kind of things? Well, this kind of objects, a priori, they live in a huge space, the space of endomorphism of formal series. So it's a huge space, but when we translate the properties, we are the constraints on H on that one, here we can have nonlinear equations, there we can have linear, we translate them into linear relations in a huge space. Of course, then there is work to do. We want to show that to express such an automorphism, and show that it is indeed an automorphism effect. It respects the product, and this will give us algebraic constraints. It will be more explicit in a moment. So, but this is an important thing. Once again, we want to work on this all the way till the end, in the last quarter of an hour, with these automorphisms of substitution. And second thing, before I go into the expansion into resurgent monomials, remember some very basic fact, is that a sum of derivations can be an automorphism of substitution. I'm sorry, I apologize for the simplicity of the example, but it's just to keep this in mind with, when I will tackle with complicated expansions later on. Okay, see here on the right, you have an infinite sum of ordinary of differential operators, and the way it acts on functions of Z, let's say polynomial or analytic functions at infinity for example, it acts as an automorphism. The operation of going from F to G . Am I clear here? I'm just wanted to recall that an infinite sum of ordinary ordinary differential operators here can yield as a result, when we let it act on observables, an automorphism. Okay? And so we will perform in the last quarter of an hour constructions involving infinite sums of derivations.
So why do you shift by one? Because it doesn't do anything.
It's an example.
It doesn't do anything if you shift by one, so why do you do that?
No, I'm just saying that when I just write Taylor formula, I apologize for the simplicity of the example. My point was just to say, when I write the Taylor formula in this way, I have here an infinite sum of ordinary differential operators, iterates of a derivation, that yield as a result this transformation on functions, which to f from f sends to g, which is the function which sends z to f of z plus 1. Okay, so it's a basic transformation. It's just to remind that it makes sense to do as we do in a minute, infinite sums of ordinary differential derivations, and in the end get, if we had satisfied, if good algebraic relations are satisfied, in the end we have an automorphism. That's the only point in here. Am I clear?
So why is it zeta plus 1 or chi plus 1?
It's just an example.
Just an example. I said, it's just here. I'm just saying that this here, the transformation from F to G, which associates to Z, F of Z plus 1. It could be anything else. I'm just saying that this transformation is just an infinite sum of ordinary differential operators. And it's,
Maybe I'm trying to clarify, maybe I confused things. What is involved to sort of bring the equation to normal form would be a series of substitutions. So now if you change the variable, so if you do that, that's a non-linear thing.
Exactly.
But this substitution, in fact, is the linear operator applied to the space of functions.
Exactly.
So instead of working with non-linear things, working with differential operators and linear.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, but maybe I wasn't clear at this point, okay? So it's the basic thing to keep in mind for the last now 12 minutes of my talk, okay? Now, with this in view, we make an ansatz. We take as input we take as input these differential operators. The most simple, I mean, they're just differential operators involving just one variable u, and they are monomials. They are constants. These are our data. We give ourselves a family of constants, and so we give ourselves its equivalent, a family of operators, and we try to build an automorphism of substitution equal let's say this differential equation here with the second with the nonlinear perturbation I denoted by x. So we want to build such an automorphism of substitution by plugging in using this as input. So we look a priori, so this is the ansatz. Okay, so we are looking for some families of functions. I see them, in the z variables, but you remember, when I'm saying that they are resurgent with the singularities on z, I'm talking about the Borel transform of these functions. So, such that this thing will conjugate the equation we are looking for to its normal form, okay, and which has the good invariance. And now I must be very sketchy, but now, I'm saying the following thing. If we have a family, suppose we know how to build, and I will indicate the few steps in the remaining few minutes. If you have a family of resurgent functions, remember, they are functions of a variable z, which is near infinity, but we are really concerned about their Borel transform, and we claim that these functions have Borel transform with isolated singularities over integers, and moreover, they satisfy such a relation of this type. Okay, delta n0, which measures the singularity at the point n0 of this function, okay, is just the same one, but one letter, the first letter erased. Okay, if it's not very difficult to check that, formally, when you have a family of functions that satisfies this, it will solve this relation, and it will have the good exactly the as invariance, as analytic invariance, the A1s we started from. What is difficult is to build such a family of functions, and first thing, And also, what is very difficult is convergence. Of course, we don't want just a verification of formal expansions. These are operators adding, acting on spaces of resurgent functions, so we must control the convergence of all these expansions. And that's why it has not been, this part of Eckhout's work has not been used until now. And by the way, all the calculation with respect to some of these objects are done in details in David's paper, which I mentioned before. And now in the minutes, in the 5 minutes that remain, I will say a few words for the construction of these resurgent functions. Remember, what we are looking at, we are trying to find some families of resurgent functions, so they are just analytic functions of one complex variable, zeta, with isolated singularities as integers, which satisfy such relations. Where can we go to build such family of functions? Well, remember, we want to study functions which have isolated singularities. Of which type? Poles, for example, as Arkady mentioned, or logarithmic singularities. So let's go. We can start to build functions, let's say, one letter zeta minus omega 1. That's a pole. Well, we want logarithm. Okay, so we can integrate. Okay, and we also want pole, but maybe at another point, so let's divide. And it will be convenient to consider things at this, to encode the function in this way. What do we get in this way? Hyperlogarithms. So it's a very natural quest. We are looking for functions which behave simply in the Borel plane with respect to alien derivations. By very, you know, common sense observations, we fall upon a family of functions that you all know, the hyperlogarithms, which are iterated integrals, and these functions have indeed good properties, but not exactly the one we wanted for, we were looking for. So, and we have this 5 minutes to conclude. Sorry?
We already had that. We already had that.
The 5 minutes?
No, I'm just joking.
Yeah. Okay. So we have these functions which are defined recursively by here. There is minus sign. Okay, so there is a recursive. Sorry.
You have another V.
Yeah. There's another V here. Yeah, sorry. Okay. So in the Borel plane, but remember, once we know it in the Borel plane, I'll pull back. We know functions in the Z plane. We have defined by recursion a family of functions, which have good symmetry properties. Now, what do I mean by symmetry properties? You remember we had these expansions here. Well, if we put any functions here, maybe functions that we are interested in for the singular behavior they have, but which don't have any good symmetry properties, we have no chance to get an automorphism. We have no chance that such an infinite sum will respect the product. Here we are composing ordinary differential operators. So there must be, if we want to find something interesting, something which will be an automorphism, there must be some symmetry properties in this on this side. And the symmetry properties are these ones. Okay. Okay, what do I have? What do I mean? I'm claiming that the functions which are inductively defined in this way satisfy this relation. What is this sign here is the shuffle. In we take two words, you know, omega prime of and omega prime prime are words. When we mix them, but by keeping the internal order of each word, we obtain what is called the shuffle. We had an expert in cards before, but he's gone. And so when we consider this thing, and if we have this property, for every sequence and every pair of subsequence omega prime, omega prime prime, then such a family of functions will be called symmetral, and the resulting expansion will be an automorphism. Okay? So it means we have constraint. When we want to build resurgent monomials, we not only want to encode polar singularities and logarithmic singularities or else, we also want to encode them in a way that the whole family satisfies some very it's an important constraint, a family of algebraic relations. In this case, those of you who are familiar with iterated integrals know that it will satisfy the shuffle relations. Okay, now there is a process to go, but now I over my time and I will conclude into, well, yeah, 1 minute. Yeah, there is a process to go from these V's to this U's. Let's use one combinatorial apparatus which is known as mole calculus, but in this case it's very elementary. It uses a mixing of two operations on moles, and it's simple and it's explicit. I mean, it doesn't need any heavy formalism, any black box that we would import. It's just analytic functions of one complex variable and combinatorics. And so with this, in this way we can build such a use. Okay, and now I'm over my time. I don't think I will write anything, but just a few comments. Convergence. Convergence is a very delicate problem, and in fact with the use which are obtained by this process, it's not enough. These things will explode. You will not have geometric growth in a good sense for one, and so you will introduce a parameter and introduce a new family of monomials depending of a parameter. Yes, I will write just a few things. Maybe just this thing. Okay, we can use the same formulas. And once again, the formulas are completely explicit in the twisted paper by Ekal. And in the places when we have this in the formulas, the omega z, omega has the vocation of being a singularity in the Borel plane, we have to go into z minus 1. So at the same time, they are the two variables. And what happens in the end is that this way we obtain objects that are convergent. And but we build two objects at the same time. The one we were looking for, z large, but also an object with respect to z small. So to me, it's a bit reminiscent of what I've read, but I'm very ignorant in problems of the type of UVIR connections. So I'm not, it's just a question. If you are involved with resurgence involving series expansions, and whether you are looking at what is going, let's say, for the crucial variable, z large, and if for some strange reason you have at the same time conversion for z large and for z small, it may be worth looking at this underneath your computations. You are not dealing with some forms of this special resurgence monomial, which are called paralogarithmic. Now, I'm finished. Arborification is just that then you compose only linear differential operators. Well, you have to be efficient to index this composition with trees, and that's where the apparatus was involved here, but I'm now over my time, and I thank you for your attention.